It's indeed an honor for me to be here this morning, and I must confess that I'm pretty sure I've caused some frustration for Dee. He called me 2 or 3 weeks ago and said that he needed my presentation for the proceedings. So, Dee, here are my the information you can include in the proceedings if you'd like. My phone rang at 8:31 this morning, and Dee said, "Where are you?" And I said, "Well, I don't speak till 9 o'clock." And I said, "I'm sitting out in the parking garage reviewing some results that I just got in from the American Angus Association this morning." So it's always an interesting time, and genomics certainly add to that excitement. Sometimes it's excitement in a good way. Sometimes it's excitement in a very frustrating way. I guess I'd start by saying that I'm not sure that there's much that I could share with you folks that'll be very enlightening in terms of reproduction, because I feel like at Noel Crest Farms, we are maybe a little bit behind the curve in terms of implementing technology. Sometimes we experience frustration, I'm sure like most other producers do, on a very regular basis, and we're always questioning what we're doing. So I can assure you that anything I'll share with you this morning, our processes are not very set in stone, because we always recognize that we need to change and improve them. Just to give you a little bit of background, our family has been in the seed stock business since 1944. My father and grandfather, Paul Bennett, bought their first registered polled Hereford heifer in 1944. So we've been selling commercial bulls since 1944. Initially with polled Herefords, we added Guelphie cattle in 1980 and have worked with that breed since 1980. We added Angus in 1990, and that breed has certainly served us extremely well. And in the last 10 to 15 years have created a lot of hybrid or composite type bulls, primarily Angus Guelphie cross bulls. We've added some Simmental, and are at a point now where we're marketing a fair number of Hereford cross bulls as well. We run 750 to 800 cows depending on the time of year. We will sell about 400 bulls this year. We're on target to be right at 400. We have 2 bull sales a year. We sell our fall-born bulls as short yearlings the first Friday in December. We sell our spring-born bulls the second Saturday in April. And then we sell bulls private treaty 12 months out of the year, 6 days a week. We have found that we have a lot of customers who really like the bull sale setting. They like an auction setting. We have a lot of other customers that much prefer the one-on-one interaction and the opportunity to buy bulls at private treaty. So both of those marketing means work very well for us. We sell a lot of bulls sight unseen, and I'm very proud of that, and am very protective of it, in that I feel like that's probably the one area that requires the most responsibility, is servicing those sight unseen bull purchases. And I would say that we will probably, you know, somewhere between 30 and 35% of the bulls we'll sell this year will be sight unseen, both private treaty and at our bull sales. I'm going to start out on the bull side, since we're talking about bull sales. We do sell short yearling bulls. We, through our private treaty, will have a few long yearling bulls that we offer. But one thing that we really like, we really think our customers like, maybe I should say, is the guarantee that we offer on our bulls, which is pretty much a 12-month unconditional guarantee. And the example that I give people when trying to explain that to them is that if you buy a bull from us and 10 months from now he gets hit on the train track or struck by lightning, we'll replace him. I mean, my goal is always a satisfied customer. I do recognize that probably from time to time we will be taken advantage of, and that's just part of doing business as I see it. The other thing I would add with respect to our sight unseen bull purchases is that we actually encourage our customers not to pay for those bulls until they've taken delivery for them. And so that's something we encourage them, and we even suggest that they might want to have those bulls on hand for about 30 days if there's any concern that they're not going to be fully satisfied with that bull initially. In, for example, our upcoming early December sale, we do offer customers the option to pay for those bulls after the first of the year if it works to their advantage from a tax standpoint or management standpoint to delay payment until after January 1. So this guarantee we think is good for our customers. We know it's good for us because it's great from a marketing standpoint. It's great from a customer relations standpoint. But it does cause us to really work hard at bull development. And we found that bull development is an educational process for us, and it's an educational process for our customers. You know, we used to think that yearling bull had to weigh 1,200 pounds at a year of age if you wanted to have progressive commercial customers or seed stock producers interested in him. Now with EPDs and genomics and the other ways that we can quantify cattle, our goal is to develop bulls in a much different fashion than we did years ago. And I think this is a very big component of fertility and longevity. We develop our bulls out on pasture. We no longer confine them like we used to do many years ago. Bulls are fed a ration that allows them to gain 2.5 to 3.25 pounds a day. It involves forage. It involves a lot of fescue hay. And we just find that we can bring these bulls along and have yearling weights in the 1,000 to 1,150, a few 1,200-pound bulls, and we can develop bulls that are going to be really sound. They're going to be, from a condition standpoint, they're going to be much more ready to go to work than a bull weighing 200 pounds more would be. Those feet are a lot sounder than they would be otherwise. And we just think that they're much more user-friendly to our customers. And it has been interesting to feel good about the fact that the educational process is working, that a person can come to us and he can buy an Angus bull that is 110 pounds of yearling weight but only weighed 1050 at 365 days of age. And we can help that customer understand that bull does indeed have 110 pounds of yearling weight, even though he didn't weigh 1,325 pounds at a year of age. So that is working well, and we do believe that that development process really allows our bulls to go out and work harder at a young age, and it gives us fewer returns. Now, I was kind of thinking about the reasons that we might have a customer need to exercise that 12-month guarantee. And I would say that by far and away, the largest factor is going to be injuries. We wind up with bulls with broken legs and broken penises on a pretty regular basis. We really discourage our customers from using multiple bull pastures. However, we recognize that a lot of them are forced into that situation. The one thing that appears to be working very well for several of our customers who 5 years ago were running 3 and 4 bulls with a big set of cows is coming up with a rotation program where those young bulls are rotated in and out on a weekly basis. And it looks like that is working well to reduce injuries and increase the breeding capacity of those bulls. Generally, we find that with our breed and soundness exams, we do alleviate the semen quality issues that might become a problem later on. Occasionally, we'll run into that libido problem. And, you know, that's always a frustrating thing, a tough one to quantify. I think of an example. I had a gentleman down in Western North Carolina that was a first-time bull buyer, and he called me. This had been 10 years ago, and he was interested in a bull, and we sent him a bull down, and we explained the guarantee, and he called me about 3 months after he'd taken delivery of that bull, and he said, "Mr. Bennett, I really hate to call you," but he said, "I am very observant of my 28 cows," and he was retired, and he said, "I watch them really close," and he said, "That bull's just not servicing cows." He said, he appears to be fit. He runs with the cows, but he said he doesn't show any interest. And he said, "I'm just sure he's not servicing any cows." So I told him to, you know, send a bull to the stockyard. And he actually came and picked up another bull and took him back. And everything was fine. He is a producer that even though his calving was fairly seasonal, he did run his bull year-round. Well, that fall, I got a call from him, and he said, "You know, I hated to call you the first time," but he said, "I really hate to call you this time." He said, "You would not believe what a nice set of calves I've got sired by that first bull you sent me." And, you know, I knew he did it in good faith, and it was a learning experience for both of us. But I guess that being just to reiterate the fact that we find that the libido is not often a problem with bulls. I guess the one thing that does frustrate us, and this is not, it's not a breed-specific kind of issue, but we really get frustrated with foot problems in cattle. And even though we think our less stressful bull development has got to be a huge help, we do run into too many problems with foot issues. And I guess as I discuss this with folks at the different breed associations, I am really advocating for our breed associations to develop a good, meaningful way for us to document and quantify these foot problems and hopefully generate EPDs that will allow us to be a little more accurate in our selection for foot, reduced foot problems and issues that affect longevity on the male side of things. All right, I'll now move to our AI program, which is very simple. It's pretty straightforward. No new technology there. We do calve all of our heifers. Everybody calves at 2 years of age. We calve for 60 days in the fall. Basically, from September 1 to November 1, we calve for 60 days in the spring. Basically, start calving around the 5th of February and are done by the middle of April. With respect to those calving seasons, at this point, our goal is to try to move our spring calving season earlier. We really need to be calving kind of January, February. For us, where we're located, pretty much all of our pastures have hot fescue. We do not try to incorporate the fungus-free fescues just because we know that very few of our customers do, and we just think it's really important that we breed cattle that'll work in the same environment that they're going to have to work in for our customers. And I do believe that cattle that will thrive on end-of-fight Kentucky 31 fescue will work pretty much, they'll work better in any other environment that I can think of in the country. So with our fescue, we recognize that we're calving too late for spring calving. And that is always an issue for us, getting spring calvers bred after June 1. And it's related to hide color. You know, those black-hided cattle in the summer on hot fescue we just have a real challenge getting them pregnant. So our goal is to move that breeding program up a little bit, recognize that January calving is going to require a little more management than we like to give at calving, but we just think that's going to be the key to us improving fertility rates in our spring calving program. We breed our heifers a week ahead of our cows, have experimented with several different synchronization protocols, and I guess what's probably worked best for us in the last 3 or 4 years is the 14-day seeder protocol with the heifers, and we've been averaging somewhere in that 65% conception rate first service on our heifers. With our cows, we use a 7-day seeder protocol on most of our cows. The fall calvers are really easy to get pregnant. Generally we can average 75% to 80% conception rate on our cows. In our fall calving program, we give up, 15% at least in our spring calving program. At this point, all of our breeding is based on standing heat. We use heat patches and do observe heats, breeding twice a day. I'm guessing that we will very, very soon go to just a time breeding situation on both our heifers and cows. I guess as I'm becoming more confident that that's going to work, I feel like we'll probably move to that. We basically go one round of synchronized AI, and then bulls go out fairly quickly thereafter. As I mentioned, we breed for, 60, actually it's 63 days. We try to have situations where bulls are not overloaded. I've run into that in the past with synchronized groups of cows that, challenging a bull on those repeats. So we try to have enough bull power that we don't work those bulls too hard. And we do rotate bulls for the last heat cycle and have found that that just reduces our risk of taking a big hit if we've got a bull that's not working like he needs to be. That certainly causes us to have to do some DNA sire verifications from time to time, but I'm fortunate to have a father who's 80 years old. We took him off the paycheck 15 years ago, Don, but he still shows up to work every morning, and he kind of needs to do most of his work from a pickup now, so he finds some of those cows in heat before the bulls do, and he's really good about getting breeding dates for us. So that helps from that standpoint. We'd like to think that the bulls that we're turning out are bulls that are somewhat competitive with the bulls that we're breeding AI. A lot of the bulls that we use are bulls that we co-own or have leased to AI studs or young bulls that we think are prospects to move in that direction. And certainly as I think about ways that we benefit from reproductive efficiency, for us it's AI and embryo transfer, which I'll talk about in just a second, have allowed us to improve cattle in ways that we couldn't even think about doing 40 years ago. And as I look at the EPD profile on the set of bulls that we're going to be selling, the bulls that we weighed off test and ultrasounded yesterday, I just look at the improvement we've made from a data standpoint by using primarily only high accuracy AI bulls. I've always said that I would not AI to an unproven bull unless I owned him, and I still subscribe to that and believe that that's extremely important, that our AI program does need to be dedicated pretty heavily to highly proven bulls. With respect to our embryo transfer program, we're really blessed to have a great veterinarian and embryologist, Dr. Pete Fulper, down at Gretna. And Pete does all of our embryo transfer work. for the last 3 years, we've put in 150 to 200 embryos. We try to do about everything fresh if possible, and putting in those eggs fresh has been a real time saver, money saver, and it has absolutely been huge with respect to our conception rates. And, you know, we used to think that a 50% conception rate was pretty good with frozen embryos, and I think it probably is, at least for us, but we've been able to accomplish, you know, 70 to as high as 85% conception rates using fresh embryos. And that process has become pretty simple for me in particular, because I can send all my donors to Dr. Fulper. He manages them on site and, you know, sets them up, and we'll flush 7 or 8 cows one morning and put all those eggs in fresh during the day. And with the need to no longer heat check recips like we used to think we needed to, you know, our embryo transfer program is pretty user-friendly anymore. I guess another point that I would like to hit on briefly that has been a real management improver for us is Dr. Andy Meadows has been doing all of our, or essentially all of our preg checking by ultrasound for the last 6 or 8 years, and that's something that we find to be a great management tool. We try to preg check 95 days after the first female in a group was bred. Our embryo calves, our ET program, we preg check at pretty close to day 95. That way we can fetal sex everything, and we do know we've got a pregnancy at 95 days as opposed to 40 or 50 days. And that 95-day target also allows us to get documentation on every female in the group, and we can fetal sex a very high percentage of them. We do use, I probably should have mentioned earlier, we've got 4 folks that serve as cooperators for us that make some of our bulls and all of our ET calves. And I know one of those cooperators, just he loves the ultrasound preg check fetal sexing. He actually divides his cows prior to calving by the sex of the calf that they're going to deliver that fall. And as he says, you know, it's so much easier to sort that 8-month pregnant cow than it is a cow with a 2-month-old calf inside. So it allows him to do a lot of advanced planning. For us, it gives us the opportunity to sell some heifer pregnancies, which we do some of, and it also allows us to manage for inventory in the future. You know, occasionally we'll have a customer that's wanting a set of females that are all going to have bull calves or all going to have heifer calves, and certainly this allows us to tailor our marketing to customer needs. The other thing that it does allow us to do by having exact breeding dates is we tend to remove those later bred females from our breeding program, and so it allows me to better manage our calving season and putting together those groups of females that we're going to market. I guess another thing I'll hit on briefly is just as I look at fertility from a breed association perspective, one thing that we found that really helps us to quantify the genetics in our herd from any angle is approaching our data reporting from a whole herd reporting scenario. And I guess I would encourage all breeders to move to whole herd reporting. Some of our breed associations are making it essentially mandatory. Others doing it on a voluntary basis, but we found that that really does help us manage our cattle. It helps us know what we have. It helps us to know what we work on. And when we do take a whole herd reporting approach and we weigh our cows at weaning time and we record disposition scores, we record udder scores, and, you know, make observations like, I know we shipped a cow here the early part of the week, and she'd done fine except that she was a cow that had resisted her calf for the first few hours after it was born this spring, and she was a cow that we had to bring in and deal with there for a 24-hour period to get her to claim a calf. And I guess we're just at a point where we feel like, you know, we want our cattle to work for us. We don't want to work for them, and we believe that that is just cause for removing a cow from our breeding program. And our goal really, even though we're trying to produce cattle that are outliers, I mean, the cattle that, you know, Don Tremmer or Tom McCall or Brian House are gonna be interested in because they're the big spread cattle with the strong end product merit. Really, our primary goal is to produce cattle that are problem free. And I think when we think about creating problem free cattle, it obviously starts with reproduction and fertility. And our real goal is just to create cows that are going to be problem free and not give us a reason to need to remove them from our breeding program, and cows that will have a lot of longevity. So with that, Brian, I'm going to stop.